Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 10th day of April in the year 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Please keep telling friends and spreading the word of the podcast. We are growing. We've grown quite a bit recently, and it's all because of you. I thank you very much for that. I owe you. I owe you. I don't know how I can, if you ever need a kidney, I'll track somebody down in a prison in China and get, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I might have a good kidney guy. Anyway, you can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, stories, whatever you got. I'm going to refer to a story that somebody sent in just last night, later on in the program, because I'm going to go off on a rant on taxes and the reporting on taxes. My voice is not yet 100%. So bear with me as I fight through the lingering end stages of whatever the hell's been going on in my sinuses and throats. It's not, I know, I got emails. You got allergies. I don't have allergies. I've never had allergies except maybe to aspirin. One time as a kid, I took aspirin and I also ate a Whopper and my hands and face swelled up. And then the next day, my feet swelled up. My hands and face were down. And the doctor said, don't eat a Whopper and don't take aspirin anymore. So I didn't for a very long time. Still haven't taken aspirin, but I've been forced to eat Whoppers because the wife does occasionally like Burger King. But I've ended up taking things and then only later to read the warning labels that says aspirin sensitive patient shouldn't take it. And it was too late because that's how I am. Instructions are for suckers. Anyway, lots of things to get to. Really, putting IKEA together, stuff together is an adventure because I'd like to try and figure it out. It's really neat when you end up with pieces that look like they're crucial, but the whole thing seems to be done. It doesn't collapse, so what are you going to do? I want to talk a little bit, first of all, the big news yesterday in international front. Benjamin Netanyahu, according to Reuters and all the news sources, has been reelected as the Prime Minister of Israel. Congratulations to Bibi Netanyahu, a fifth term as Prime Minister of Israel. The media tried their best. The Democratic Party. I wonder how many Obama disciples were dispatched to Israel this time, although without our tax dollars this time, to try and defeat him to no avail. Just, I really only bring this up to acknowledge that it happened, and so I can play this clip from Napoleon Dynamite, or Beto O'Rourke, just last week. The foreign policy genius and scholar that Beto O'Rourke is said this just last week.
Now, I don't think that Benjamin Netanyahu represents the true will of the Israeli people or the best interests of the U.S.-Israel relationship or any path to peace.
Isn't he just a genius, that Beto? You just want to pat him on the head and send him out for a pack of cigarettes and get some beer because you don't want him around. He's not a very bright man. Oh, poor Beto. He's still struggling with no longer being the flavor of the moment in the Democratic Party. Boy, they loved him. And then they asked him basic questions and he couldn't answer them. So they said, hey, wait a second, this guy will get just destroyed by Donald Trump. Maybe we should look elsewhere. And we'll talk about Mayor Pete, was the flavor of the moment now in a bit. But I want to stick on the concept of, or the talk of Israel and Jews just for a second here, because on the day of the Israeli election, Newsweek decided to, they released their new cover. And on it, last week, I think it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I believe there was a color by numbers and some crossword puzzles with, you know, nothing bigger than three-letter words inside so that when she read it, she would feel comfortable with the magazine. Newsweek is really only like 8 pages now. It's a damn joke. They released their new issue, the cover of what it's going to look like, and it's got Ilhan Omar, noted anti-Semite and a proud member of the Democratic Party and the member of Congress from Minnesota, on the cover. And they tweeted it out. And it says, they said, new cover story, how Ilhan Omar is changing the conversation about Israel and upending the 2020 campaign. Yes, she's changing the conversation in Israel. She changed it by saying, I hate Jews and I want to destroy Israel. If you call me out for this, the activist wing of the party is going to scream at you in public and launch primary challenges against you. And the Democrats all said, we capitulate. She's got a long history of anti-Semitism, but she's changing the conversation about Israel. Isn't that lovely? Aren't these people just awful human beings? These Democrats really are worthless, horrible, disgusting people. And I mean that in a good way, in a nice way. Chris Hayes, of course, the Rachel Maddow of MSNBC with an outie, he tweeted out that, I'd say that Omar is one of the most consistent voices for human rights in the Middle East across various governments and regimes. Yes, she's a voice for human rights by calling for supporting the extinction of Israel, accusing Jews in the United States of having dual loyalties, saying that Jewish money is buying political support here. But yes, she's a voice for human rights and changing the conversation amongst Democrats. She's also, one last thing on Ilhan Omar. These people literally give you a show's worth of stuff every single day on their Twitter feeds. She tweeted this out yesterday as well. Quote, I ran on the promise to end the president's hateful Muslim ban, and tomorrow we will introduce a bill to do just that. No one should be denied basic human rights because of their religion, race, or national origin. Hashtag No Ban Act. Oh, no, they're trying to overturn the president's moratorium on immigration from seven, third world hellholes, where we cannot get information on the people. By the way, they're certainly not all the Muslim countries. It's not a Muslim ban unless we really missed a memo and Muslims now dominate in Venezuela and North Korea. Those are the two of the seven countries out there. The other ones are terrorist-supporting countries. And Ilhan Omar, she has her priorities, and they're not particularly favorable to the United States of America. So she wants to overturn the travel ban. Democrats, of course, have been desperate to do this, chomping at the bit. It's not going anywhere. The United States Senate isn't even going to bother taking it up. And I doubt the House may vote on it when it's a slow news week and they think they can get some good media coverage off of it. But this is a show vote. This is what the Democrats do. They divide by race, religion, gender, anything they can, and they're going to introduce piece of legislation after piece of legislation in the House designed to do just that, divide people while saying Republicans are trying to divide everybody. It's just not right. Well, lovely little Ilhan. I guess I have one more thing about sweet, sweet, nourishing Ilhan Omar. A refugee taken in. You know, her country was an absolute hellhole that her family had to flee, and then they were in a refugee camp that was an absolute hellhole in another hellhole country that they had to flee. And the United States took them in, and she has been crapping on the United States ever since. I don't know why we would bother to it. We need to maybe screen our refugees a little bit better if this is the quality of refugees that we're getting. She spoke to a Muslim group about a month ago. This clip is just now resurfacing. She seems to only speak to Muslim groups. She raises money from weird places and has supporters that are less than good people, shall we say. But hey, she'll probably win re-election because she's Somali in a heavily Somali district, and Democrats have beaten into the heads of people that you can only elect only people who look like you can represent you. And, you know, they say, and I'm going to swear here, so fair warning, just one word. They always say, and this is one of my favorite sayings that I came up with years ago, they say that cream rises to the top, but sometimes shit floats too. At this speech to a Muslim group last month, Ilhan Omar made a reference to 9/11. It's perhaps the most disturbing and casual reference to 9/11 you will ever hear honest to God, you would have, if you watched the whole speech, you'd probably miss this reference because you can't even tell that she's actually referring to September 11th with the casual way she just kind of dismisses that 19 Muslim terrorists from a Muslim terrorist organization killed 3,000 Americans because they wanted to. Listen to how she just casually mentions these terrorists and paints herself as a victim at the same time.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, was founded after 9/11 because some people did some stuff. You know, they just did some stuff. What stuff? Who knows? They just did some stuff. And we suddenly became victims. Not the 3,000 Americans of all religions who were murdered cold blood that day. No, no, no. The real victims were people like Ilhan Omar and CARE, the unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, who has ties to terrorist financing. But hey, you know what? They're only out there doing the Lord's work or whatever, something like that. You can fill in the blanks. This is, again, a Democrat in good standing. You ever hear a member of Congress just say, yeah, you know what? That was a pretty bad Tuesday we had back then. But moving on, I don't know how you could refer to the September 11th attacks any more casually than because some people did some things. Yeah, you know, some guys woke up in the morning and they said, hey, you know what? What are you doing today? You want to go do some stuff? And then next thing you know, CARE was founded because, oh, these poor victims. This is, again, a Democrat in good standing. This is who they are. They'll occasionally, especially the novices, show you who they are. The pros, they're a little bit, they play their cards a little bit closer to the vest. They hide it a little bit better. Even they slip up occasionally. But the amateurs, they just play their cards flat up, face out. You know, hey, let's just, here's who it is. Some people did some stuff on September 11th, but that doesn't give you the right to do anything that I don't like. These people are crazy, 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 and they have to have every little last scintilla of power they have ripped from their hands. They will not give it up voluntarily. All right, moving on. There's a lot of stuff I want to get to. The Attorney General of the United States was up on Capitol Hill yesterday. There's only one clip I want to play. It is indicative of how the day went. Bill Barr was up on Capitol Hill, Attorney General Bill Barr was up on Capitol Hill testifying about the budget. They're supposed to be working on the budget for the Justice Department. He was up there to ask questions, explain why he needs money for this and not for that, so on and so forth. Everything you'd expect to be involved in budgeting. Well, Democrats, of course, saw this as an opportunity to grandstand. It's also a testimony to how bad journalism is. I tried to watch some of this hearing. I was flipping between the three news channels, and they were cutting in and out of it at random based on, you know, if a Democrat was questioning Barr, suddenly they cared. And then they would cut away sometimes if it wasn't bombastic enough. Their actual news happening live. They have the live feed. They could just run it. And instead, they go to completely disconnected people blathering on about their opinions about something they're clearly not watching because it's happening now. It's not journalism. Journalism is dead. Anyway, Nita Lowey of New York, Congresswoman, Democrat, encapsulates how the Democrats were about this, about Bill Barr, involved in this very serious discussion about the budget. Remember all their whining about, oh, spending and all the Republicans and the deficit and blah, blah, blah. They have no interest in that crap either. Neither party has any interest in that crap. It's a joke at this point. $22 trillion, we couldn't possibly pay that off. Luckily, we owe most of it to ourselves, so we're just screwing ourselves over even more. But she wanted to know, and they all wanted to know, how could you possibly, 400 pages of Mueller's report, and you summarize it in 48 hours with four, this is impossible. And he told them, we had a heads up. We'd been, you know, Rosenstein had been working with him. We knew what was coming, so we knew what to look for. And Mueller had a chance to look at the letter, and he passed on it because he trusted the attorney general. And he's not said anything to the contrary to what the attorney general said about the conclusions in the report. So one would assume that's pretty accurate. Well, Democrats want answers. They're trying to keep this scandal alive. They would not perform CPR on a beloved family member for as long a time as they have been trying to perform CPR on the Russia hoax. Here is Nita Lowey trying to demand answers from Bill Barr, and Bill Barr calmly just basically gives her the hand. He just says, shut up. I'm done talking about this crap. We're here for other things. You'll get the report next week. Chillax. It's done much more diplomatically than I just did there, or I actually could as a human being. I'd have probably sworn at them, but it's a bit of a funny moment, and it really is how the Democrats' questioning or attempted questioning of Bill Barr went, to the point that there's no real news coming out of this story yesterday.
Did the White House see the report before you released your summarizing letter? Has the White House seen it since then? Have they been briefed on the contents beyond what was in your summarizing letter to the Judiciary Committee?
I've said what I'm going to say about the report today. I've issued three letters about it, and I was willing to discuss the historic information of how the report came to me and my decision on Sunday. But I've already laid out the process that is going forward to release these reports, hopefully within a week. And I'm not going to say anything more about it until the report is out and everyone has a chance to look at it.
That's how you shut them down. You act like the adult in the room. Every Democrat coming in, what about this? How could you? We're here talking about the budget. No, we're not interested in that. Democrats aren't interested in doing their jobs. They're going to get the report, the redacted, the legal version. It's amazing watching Democrats try to encourage the Attorney General of the United States to break the law, a law that they created. Just give us the whole report, unredacted. Give us, you can trust us. We never leak anything. Yeah, right. So, yes, kudos to Bill Barr yesterday for just in the face shutting these people down in a very, very calm and relaxed demeanor. I could not have done that myself. In other news, like I said, I want to get to a lot of things. Bernie Sanders, it's kind of funny. You wouldn't know it, but Bernie Sanders did not release his tax returns in 2016. All the talk about Donald Trump needs to release his tax returns and the Democrats trying to sue to get 6 years worth of tax returns, Donald Trump, and they're saying everybody releases their tax returns. Why didn't he do it? Bernie Sanders didn't either. There's a very specific reason why Bernie Sanders didn't do it. He is a socialist, an avowed, happy, giddy socialist. And he's also a millionaire, which is weird because Bernie Sanders got rich while in public service, quote unquote. Don't you love that? Don't you love how these leftists use their position in government to make an absolute fortune? Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, they have no real marketable skills to speak of. Barack Obama has worked as a politician the vast majority of his adult life. The other part of his adult life where he wasn't a politician, he was a community organizer, not rolling in dough. Now he's worth $100 million. He's getting deals from Hollywood to produce shows, even though he's never produced a show in his life. He's getting a $100 million development deal with Netflix. Why? Because he's Barack Obama. They get rich off of public service on the left. On the right, people get rich in the private sector, and then they go into public service, doing it backwards. Why don't you do like the Harry Reid business model, a man of modest means who then leaves and retires from the United States Senate worth tens of millions of dollars? How did he make that money? Sweetheart land deals with using his political position and power to make sure that he wet his beak in all sorts of corruption. Very, very weird. Well, Bernie Sanders hasn't gotten rich that corrupt way. He's got rich in another corrupt way. He leveraged his position and his popularity to sell a ton of books. He told the New York Times, quote, that he's a millionaire, quote, I wrote a best-selling book. If you write a best-selling book, you can be a millionaire too. Well, then why do you hate this country, Bernie? Because it sounds like it's pretty easy. Your book sucks, and you now are a millionaire, a multimillionaire. Why are you ashamed of it? Why are you trying to hide it? I suspect he's been hiding because there's been pressure on him now that there are 832 Democrats running for president for him to release his tax returns because they want to attack him for being a billionaire. And why he doesn't want that is not because he doesn't want to be attacked. He's afraid or he's unprepared to be attacked for being a millionaire. He doesn't want to do it because it's very likely that we will discover that he is not writing big fat checks to charities. He's not giving away. He's not paying his fair share in taxes, quote unquote, according to his own definition. Because you can say, well, he's only following the law. Yes, he's only following the law. But he wants to change the law to make us pay more. He could lead by example. The IRS, little known secret because nobody does it, the IRS will gladly cash any check you send them for the general fund. But Bernie ain't cutting that check. I suspect Bernie might have done some things and taken some deductions to try and lessen his tax burden. What do you think the odds of that are? This avowed socialist suddenly becomes a capitalist when it comes to his own money. I suspect that's what we'll find in Bernie's tax releases. Plus, maybe he's not writing big fat checks to the Salvation Army or to Jerry's Kids or to Shriners Hospital or whatever. Maybe we'll find out just how greedy Bernie is himself. I mean, the guy does own three homes. As far as I can tell, you can only live in one at a time. Does he really need that beachfront home that he has? Probably not. How many people could that feed and clothe and pay tuition for, Bernie? He doesn't want to answer those kind of questions because that hits a little bit too close to the hypocrisy button. And that's really what leftists are, is a bunch of raging, incredible, awful hypocrites. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. He says that he'll probably release them next Monday. Next Monday. He's waiting desperately for the Barr report to come out, the Mueller report to come out. You watch when the Mueller report, the redacted version, is released and all the media is committing a feeding frenzy on that, then Bernie will slide out. Here's my tax returns. What are you going to do? Hypocrite. Speaking of hypocrites, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is in the news again. She's always in the news, constantly. She tweeted out a video from a group called TheLeap.org, and it's narrated by actress Thandi Newton. It's kind of ironic. It's like a minute and a half long. I'll play it for you in a second, but a couple things to listen to. This is an incredibly wealthy actress, so she's not exactly breaking rocks for a living. She's not exactly, I don't know, curing cancer or making people's lives better. She, in the middle of it, she says that the revolution, that the dictators, the power of the evil, comes in a limousine. I suspect Thandi Newton doesn't drive herself very far. But again, liberals always absolve themselves of their own guilt and exempt themselves from the standards they hold to others. This video is about climate change, of course. We're all going to die. It's filled with lies like the progressive majority in this country. There is no progressive majority in this country. But before I play it, I want to read you Alexandria's tweet on it. She says, quote, "The far right loves to drum up fear and resistance to immigrants. But have you ever noticed they never talk about what's causing people to flee their homes in the first place? Perhaps that's because they're forced to confront one major factor fueling global migration, climate change." And then she tweets this video. See, the problem is, aside from AOC being just incredibly stupid in general, She doesn't understand what's actually happening on the southern border. She's not going to go to the southern border. She knows what's going on down there. She doesn't need to see it. She certainly doesn't need to hear from anybody whose job it is to protect the southern border. She knows better from her perch up in the Bronx than anybody who's actually on the front line. She's the armchair general extraordinaire, the armchair generalette. She believes that people from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador are coming to this country because of climate change. They're fleeing their countries. They're not. They're quote-unquote economic refugees. They're seeking asylum because of economics, which is not actually a lawful reason to seek asylum. The reason they're fleeing their countries is their countries are hellholes. They're absolute garbage piles, dumpster fires. Economically, corrupt politicians. They have very powerful governments and corrupt governments because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, which is why progressives want to bring that type of government here to this country. So she doesn't have any freaking idea what she's talking about. Now, in this video, there's a lot of talk about the weather, as if no hurricane had ever hit Puerto Rico, as if Puerto Rico wouldn't be a third world country were it not a territory of the United States, and wildfires in Alberta. Wildfires. Yes, wildfires have been happening long before human beings roamed the Great White North. And hurricanes have been happening long before the evil white man came over to this hemisphere. But now it's all the plot of the United States. When in this audio you're about to hear, Thandi Newton talks about all the carbon pollution being pumped out by the West and by rich countries. The map that it flashes on the screen highlights the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. The biggest so-called polluters, the biggest producing countries of carbon, of CO2, are China and India. But oddly, they are not highlighted because this movement has nothing whatsoever to do with actually implementing and following through the garbage that they spew as the cause of climate change, which is a hoax. Climate changes on its own. It always has. But it has nothing to do with that. It is about punishing the United States and wealthy countries on this planet because they have more free market systems than the rest of the world who have totalitarian crap hole regimes and, of course, socialist governments, which are totalitarian crap hole regimes. And that ain't right. They want to destroy the United States. The United States should be a shining example to the rest of the world. These morons should be going to their fellow travelers in other countries that are economically crippled and saying, hey, you know what? We've got the solution for you. Look at what the United States is doing. Try some liberty. But instead, they look at the United States and say, no, no, we have to take them down. They have to be destroyed. And this video is all about racial division and government control, control over your lives. Listen to this latest salvo in the Leni Riefenstahl award-winning documentary series by the left, making up crap about the environment to justify ripping away your liberty.
From wildfires in Alberta to hurricanes in Puerto Rico, climate change is one of the reasons many of us are forced to leave our homes in search of a safer place to live. We keep hearing that migration is a crisis, and it is, for the people affected. But did you ever notice that the same leaders denying climate change are the ones drumming up fear and hatred against migrants? Hatred with horrific consequences. We know their arguments are lies. In the real world, immigration builds our economies. Wealthy countries are already facing aging populations and seriously taking on climate change will create millions more jobs than there are workers to fill them. But it's not about the truth. These leaders are stoking fear to divide the progressive majority so they can take power and protect the status quo. The rich getting richer by wrecking the climate and abusing workers. As the saying goes, the enemy does not arrive by boat. He arrives by limousine. More and more people in the climate movement are connecting the dots. To win climate justice, we need to oppose racism. We know the world's wealthiest countries have burned most of the carbon that is driving climate change today. Asserting the rights of migrants affected by these storms, floods, and fires is a way of paying back our climate debts and refusing to be divided. When we fight together, we win.
Asserting the rights of migrants affected by these storms is a way of paying back the debt. We don't owe these crap holes anything. Shut the border down. Screw Mexico. God, it just drives me nuts, these morons. It's these racist pieces of crap going, we need to do, you have to pay. You're a horrible person. You drive a car. We have to allow them to assert their, people don't live in this country. People who enter this country illegally, where they have to assert their rights because we owe a debt to the world. No, the world actually owes us a debt because we defeated your ideological forefathers in World War II. We didn't do a thorough enough job. You infiltrated the United States and now you control the Democratic Party. And now you're trying to force fascism on us. We have to refight World War II, this time on our home turf. These people are absolute freaking nuts, insane, evil human beings. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. And speaking of immigration, Sam Vigneron, she was an advisor. She was an Obama State Department official. Now, of course, being an Obama State Department official and a mildly attractive woman, she got a CNN contract. She was an under-deputy, under-secretary, underling. Probably really didn't do all that much because she doesn't seem to know all that much. She tried to attack the president on the family separation issue that has become all the rage again lately. And in doing so, she contradicts herself several times. Of course, President Obama says, well, Obama did it for different reasons, as if it's, your reasons matter, not your actions. It's, your actions don't matter nearly as much as your words. As long as your heart is in the right place, you can screw everything up. You can put kids in cages, which is what happened during the Obama administration. And those pictures from 2014 surfaced in 2017, and the liberal media got very, very upset about it. And then they discovered that they were pictures from the Obama administration, and they stopped being upset about it. They stopped showing the pictures. They stopped complaining. You would never know that those pictures existed, nor that they took place during the Obama administration, because they have to protect the king. Listen to Sam Vigneron try to attack Donald Trump, and really just basically ends up admitting that Donald Trump is just doing what Barack Obama did, which was okay when Barack Obama did it because he was doing it for the right reasons.
And when President Obama separated children from their families, from adult Wolf, it was for their protection.
Right.
It was if there was a risk of trafficking or other kind of harm that might have been incurred. But even if he did do that, why is Donald Trump saying that two wrongs make a right? Again, Obama wasn't wrong, but so he's saying that because something happened under President Obama, he's repeating it and upping the ante. That is an incredibly poor excuse. He has systemized that inhumane treatment that, again, Obama was doing to protect the children.
Why is he saying two wrongs make a right? Not that Obama was wrong. No, glory to his name. Glory be his name. All of that. But two wrongs don't make a right. Not that he was wrong. And Obama did it for the right reasons. Wolf Blitzer quickly moved on. He saw her stomping in a pile of horse manure right in the middle of the sidewalk on a sunny day and said, we're just going to not address the hypocrisy of everything you just said there, Sam, because you're on the payroll and we're forced to book you. And I don't want it to be awkward. Plus, Wolf isn't very bright in the first place. All right, I want to talk a little bit about taxes. Oh, I know everybody hates taxes, but they're due a week from last Monday. They're due Monday. They have to be postmarked by Monday or you have to get an extension. And I'm reading all of these stories about taxes and people are thinking they're screwed and they're getting smaller refunds and they don't believe that they got a tax cut in the Republican tax bill. You did. Everybody out there got a tax cut. Maybe if there's a glow-in-the-dark unicorn out there who made $1.5 million last year, they didn't see their taxes reduced. But I highly, highly doubt it. But that doesn't stop people, because the American people don't really seem to understand how our government works. That is how so much of what Washington, D.C. does is allowed to get done. It's how it manages to get done, because people don't pay attention. They don't understand what government is supposed to do. So they just sit back and say, oh, great, government's going to do something about that problem it has no business getting into. And they expect the government to be the provider of good things and the, I don't know, protector from bad things, and not foreign bad things, but just bad things happening in your life, which is, you know, bills and things like that. It's insane. It's stupid. It's crazy. It's uninformed. I'm looking at the news today, and I see all of these stories about taxes. This one comes to us from CBS News. Tax refunds so far this year are down by $6 billion from 2018. And you think, oh my God, what's going on? If you don't understand how taxes work and why this is actually a good thing, you could read that headline and think, man, those Republicans, they just screwed over everybody and they favored the rich and blah, blah, blah. It is the Democrats' message. Matt Iglesias, who's an embarrassing human being, really kind of a dumb guy. I believe he got into Harvard because of his parents being famous. He writes for Vox. Embarrassing guy. He wouldn't be employable were he not best friends with the guy who runs the site. He was bragging on Twitter that it shows that most Americans don't realize they got a tax cut, even though they did. It shows how effective progressives have been at messaging on the Republican tax bill. Yeah, they've been very effective at messaging. That's code for lying. Now, Iglesias considers himself to be a journalist. Vox.com considers itself to be a news site. And here is one of the people who run it saying, good job, guys. You've lied to the American people. Our lies have borne fruit. People think they're getting screwed over by the Republican tax bill, the new tax law changes. And it ties into this refund business. People, there were stories, I meant to get to them before a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a couple of months ago now, but I just didn't get to them. But there were all these stories of people complaining that they feel as though they didn't really actually get a tax cut because their refunds were smaller. Here's what a refund is, ladies and gentlemen. A refund is an interest-free loan that you gave the government throughout the course of the previous year. Whatever money you're refunded, you didn't have to pay in the first place. Your employer withheld too much money, and that money sat in the government's, well, the government spent it, and now they're going to cut a check, borrowed money. It's all fake money anyway at this point, but they're going to cut you a check for the money that they held on to all year that was more than what you owed. You gave the government an interest-free loan for the previous year. That's what a refund is. Well, people getting smaller refunds are getting smaller refunds because the government, when they changed the tax laws, they changed the withholding amounts, and they were withholding less money. Your every week or biweekly or however often you're paid paycheck was larger because you were keeping more money because the tax rates were lower. It's really kind of simple. If you want to give the government an interest-free loan for some unknown reason for the course of a year, or you think that this is somehow helping you save money, it's not. You can put it in a checking account or a savings account and at least get, you know, 1% or whatever the hell the interest rate is. You are free to go to your employer and change your withholdings. You can put down that you want, you claim zero. If you have you, your spouse, and a kid, and you put down three, they're not going to withhold that much money. If you put down two exemptions, then they're going to withhold less money. That means you'll give the government more money per paycheck. And if you put down zero, then they'll hold a lot more, and you'll get a big refund at the end of the year. It doesn't change your income at all. I get it. That you think, well, you like getting that big check from the government in April or May. It's nice. When I was getting refunds, I liked getting it too. Then I realized what I was doing, and I changed my exemptions to make sure that I you know, it was either ideally I'd owe just a little bit, a couple hundred bucks, or I'd get back a couple hundred bucks because I don't want to give the government an interest-free loan. That's just me. I'm old-fashioned that way. Considering they've already spent, you know, my retirement, my Social Security, my kids' Social Security, their earnings, my grant, everybody, I don't really want to help them along that suicidal economic path. But the idea that somehow you're getting screwed because your refund is smaller, you are getting more money per paycheck. You can change that if you want the government to just, you know, write you a big check at the end of the year. But I would suggest that instead of you figure out what your average refund was over the last few years, and then you take, I don't know, 20 bucks a pay period or 20 bucks a week, and you put that into a savings account or a mutual fund or something. You just put it someplace. And then at the end of the year, you can write yourself a big check and throw yourself a party with that money. You're not actually being taxed more. You're not being screwed on your taxes. And journalists have done such an awful job of explaining this fact because they want people to think that they have gotten screwed by the Republicans on taxes when nothing could be further from the truth. This story from CBS News. Individual tax refunds this year have been only slightly smaller than last year, but those shortfalls are adding up. At the end of last month, the amount of money the government refunded was $6 billion below this time last year, according to IRS figures. First of all, the premise of this story is ridiculous, again, from what I just told you. Secondly, maybe people have filed later. Who the hell knows? You're using total dollar amounts. Like I always say, if you control the unit of measure, you'll always be the smartest, the best looking, the fastest, the most brilliant, whatever. This is a made-up number. Oh, by this arbitrary date last year, the government sent out X amount of dollars in refunds. But this year, it's less. That means people are getting smaller refunds. And the whole idea of stories like this is to get in people's minds that somehow they're getting screwed. Those rascally Republicans. Then you got this story from CNBC. The headline, few Americans think they're getting a Trump tax cut, according to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Everybody got a tax cut. No wonder the 2017 Republican tax cuts remain so unpopular. The vast majority of Americans don't think they got one at all. As the annual IRS filing deadline of April 15th approaches, just 17% believe their own taxes will go down, the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found. By contrast, 28% believe they'll pay more, 27% expect to pay about the same, and 28% don't know enough to say. Who are the people who answer surveys who just go, I ain't got no idea. I don't even know, man. Wasn't even in town that month. Everybody got a tax cut. It's that freaking simple. But because the withholding rates were lowered, your paychecks went up rather than you getting a big fat refund at the end of the year. This is how Democrats, this level of ignorance and this level of manipulation, not only by Democrats, but with their partners in the media, is what allows the left to get away with so much. It's patently, demonstrably true that tax rates were decreased, that personal exemptions were increased, that deductions, were increased. Everybody is paying less, but because they're not seeing it at the end of the year when they file their taxes, and they've seen so many stories and so many politicians saying those Republicans, they only gave tax cuts to trillionaires and quadrillionaires, people are thinking they're getting screwed. The problem is withholding in general. People think that their income is the money that they take home. In a practical sense, it is. But it's because they don't actually see the 20 to 40% of the money that the government takes before they ever get there. Or in places like New York City or California, 50%. They never see that. They see their net. They don't see their gross. And so they said, well, I don't understand what's going on. I make $100,000 a year, and I'm still having to live paycheck to paycheck. I thought this tax cut was going to save me. Well, your local taxes screw you. There are all kinds of ways. Sales taxes screw you. The government does all kinds of ways to screw you. But I guarantee you, you did get a tax cut. You are paying a lower percentage of your income this year compared to last year, unless something dramatic happened. You used to pay a mortgage, now you don't pay a mortgage, something like that. You had kids, and now they're 19, and you can't declare them anymore. Yet, this is... And this was the problem I had before the midterm elections last year. Republicans seem to think, and this was Paul Ryan's stupidity, he seemed to think that this was going to be a major win and a major bonus and a motivating factor for voters in the midterm elections. Most people, first of all, the people who got bonuses got them at the beginning of the year. So by the end of the year, they'd completely forgotten about them. And politics is never about thanking people for what they've done for you in the past. It's about what they're going to do for you in the future. You've got Democrats for 2 years lying about the taxes, people believing those lies because they're coming from trusted sources in the media. And there's nothing about the future in saying we lowered your taxes a year ago. I don't know what Paul Ryan was thinking. I know he's a numbers nerd, and he's not as smart as he thinks he is. But that was his strategy, is, well, we can run on these tax cuts. If you're running on the promise of tax cuts, that can be useful. If you're running on reelect me because I did something for you in the past, that is absolutely worthless. That's how Republicans, that's how Paul Ryan steered and encouraged people to run. Now, there's another story related to taxes, but it's just been driving me nuts. People are, well, I'm getting a smaller refund. That's good. That's a good thing. If you depend on your tax refund to, I don't know, splurge, buy a car, whatever the hell you do, it's not the government giving you extra money. That's you getting money back that you overpaid throughout the year. Put some money in a milk jug or something every week. Or change your exemptions if you really want to do that so that the government takes more of your money every pay period and then you'll get your big refund back. But there's another controversy surrounding taxes that there's always a controversy surrounding taxes. Democrats are trying to make hay out of this, even though they're involved in this. Liberal activists, I should say, are trying to make hay out of this, and the media. This from ProPublica, the left-wing public interest in quotes, journalism in quotes again, outfit. The headline, Congress is about to ban the government from offering free online tax filing. Thank TurboTax. And the story is they're trying to stir up controversy. They're trying to actively kill this bill. Just in time for tax day, the for-profit tax preparation industry is about to realize one of its long-sought goals. Congressional Democrats and Republicans are moving to permanently bar the IRS from creating a free electronic tax filing system. Ooh, ah. And everybody's upset, well, this is the government. They're owned and operated and bought and paid for by big special interests. The government has no business competing with the private sector, first and foremost. That's just bad, because then how do you compete with the government? You can't compete with the government. This isn't free, by the way. Remember how successful the Obamacare website was? Imagine those geniuses setting up a system where you input your information and they tell you how much you owe in taxes. Do you really going to trust the people who couldn't get a basic website to work for, what was it, $5 billion, something like that they spent on that website? And you're going to say, okay, well, I'll trust you with my taxes. I'll also trust you with my personal information. If you want to be an identity thief, I'm going to give you everything you want on this website created by the government. I'm sure it'll go swimmingly. Secondly, are you going to hire a fox to guard the hen house? TurboTax has to sell you. This isn't a commercial for TurboTax, although I use it. I did buy it. I bought it at Costco. It's, you know, they have an incentive, an H&R Block and all of these tax preparation services. They have an absolute incentive that the government doesn't have. They have an incentive to lower your tax burden as much as is legally possible. The IRS isn't going to double check. The IRS doesn't care. If you're paying too much, what does the IRS care? If you're not paying enough, well, the IRS then has every single worksheet and every number you put in there. So you're screwed in any event. But if H&R Block or TurboTax wants your business next year, because we got to do this stupid dance every year, they have to make your experience as pleasant as humanly possible. Now, if there is a free alternative online, even though those services, they do offer free online filing for people who have, you know, $40,000, $30,000 worth of income, not complicated tax returns. They have that for free. You can file for free online. You see the commercials everywhere. You can do it if you want. It's just not through the government. If there was a government alternative, how long do you think these companies would last? I'm not saying they would take away their 100% of their customer base, but they could do some damage. Companies don't exist to employ people. Companies, nobody starts a company because they really just want to do some good. They might do that as a byproduct, but companies exist to make money. If the government is your competition and they're offering your services for free, you're going to lose business. And whatever profit margin that you had is going to shrink dramatically and may likely disappear, probably will in a long enough horizon. So you're damn right the government should get out of the free tax preparation business. If you want to do that, fine. Use a very simple way. You can do your taxes. You just take the standard deduction. You don't itemize anything. You don't take any charitable write-offs. You don't do anything. You just see what it is. Here's what I made. Here's what they withheld. Here's what I owe. I'm cutting a check and calling it a day. That won't cost you anything. You can, but I would not trust the government with this information. I would not trust the government to calculate these things. And guess what? If they decide to audit you, they've got you. There's no real defense against that. They've got every keystroke you put in on their website, and you're screwed. So no, the government should not compete with the private industry, with the private sector. And government should not get anything but your final tax forms done and done. If you really have complicated taxes, tax season is a pain in the ass. For me, I'm a contractor and a consultant. Tax season is a pain in the ass and a pain in my bank account. When I was making $12,000 a year roofing over the summers and the winter, that one winter, my taxes were really easy. I did the 1040 easy form. I didn't need government help. I didn't need any help. You just fill out the boxes, put the numbers where they go, done and done. So, yeah, you've gotten a tax cut. If you don't like the fact that your refund is smaller, go change your exemptions with your employer and they'll gladly take out more and you can give the government an interest-free loan for the course of the year. Or maybe, just maybe, stop and think. I don't think you guys are doing this, but there are so many people that I know you know who are grousing around, I'm paying more taxes this year because my refund is smaller. That's not how it works. We need to restore our public education system in this country. My God, do we desperately need to restore our public education system in this country. But we're not going to, because there's too much power in it for Democrats. Along those lines, one of the things I was talking about last week, and I talk about from time to time, is the necessary stigma that is attached to suckling the government teat that should be there. Back when I was a kid, when you'd see people in line at the grocery store with the books of food stamps, and they'd be tearing the individual food stamps out at the grocery store. They weren't proud of it. They weren't waving them. Most people weren't. Some people were. They weren't waving them around. They did it kind of, you know, down at their waist. And how much does it? Okay, here you go. Here's my food stamps. And they're hoping nobody's watching because there was a stigma rightly attached to being on the government teat that encouraged people to want to get off of it. To get off their asses and go out and get a job or try and get a better job, whatever the case is. There should be public shame. Shame is an incredibly powerful weapon and an effective one, not coddling. Coddling doesn't do a damn thing. Well, they've replaced the food stamps with the debit cards that look like, you know, any regular old bank card, because we had to remove the stigma of the social welfare system. It's just not right that people should feel bad. Personally, I'd like to see a law, because I've been behind far too many people at 7-Eleven when they're buying Doritos and hot dogs and peanuts and crap for their kids with their quote-unquote independence card. Then I think it should be a law that they have to turn to the person behind them in line every time they swipe it and say thank you. Because the odds are the person behind them will likely be an actual taxpayer and not a parasite. That should be the level of stigma that goes along with it. I'd also like to have veto power over it. You don't really need that third bag of combos. Let's put that back. Because it used to drive me nuts when I live in Baltimore, because you'd see this, and this one time sticks with me to this day. It sticks in my craw so deep. It's annoying. Rather large woman, so she hadn't missed any meals. Running around, three kids running around. She's buying them hot dogs. She's buying them Doritos. She's buying them Big Gulps. You know, a balanced diet with her independence card. Then she reaches into her bra after that transaction is done and pulls out a wad of 20s that could choke a horse. And there she buys her cigarettes. In Maryland, you can't sell alcohol at a 7-Eleven, or I'm sure that would have been. But she bought a pack of cigarettes, and she bought some scratch-off lottery tickets, because that's exactly what people who are on welfare and getting food stamps and need. Scratchers, of course, naturally. Just the idiot tax, except we're the idiots because we're giving her the money to spend on this idiot tax. And then she goes outside and piles the family into a, I couldn't have been more than 3 years old, Mercedes. Yeah, it pissed me right off. I've been very cynical about this for a very long time, but that one really, I don't want to vandalize anything, but I came close to wanting to vandalize her freaking Mercedes on welfare. Anyway, yeah, I think we need some shaming. Some shaming goes a long way. And along those lines, when I was talking about the free lunches and the free breakfasts at school, a couple of you guys sent me some stories. I lost the one about they're sending leftovers home with kids for the weekend from the school lunch programs and the school breakfast programs, so as to feed the kids at home over the weekend, just completely absolving the worthless deadbeat parents that they have. And Jay sent me this one yesterday. It's from June of last year. Hey, it's actually from my birthday, June 22nd. This is from chalkbeat.org. It's an education website. Headline: when Denver stopped lunch shaming, debt from unpaid meals skyrocketed. What? Yeah, they used to shame kids and parents, mostly parents, because they're the ones who need the shame, when their kids would go through the line and get their lunches and say, I'll pay you later, pull the wimpy, I'll pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. And they could, you could rack up some debt and then have to pay it off. You're supposed to pay it off, but they didn't. Well, as soon as they got rid of the shaming, because they would announce, hey, you know what, your kid owes $40 to the cafeteria. And that was, of course, wrong and inhuman, because sometimes parents don't have the money to feed their kids. No, their parents have their money to feed their kids, but the state's doing it, so they don't care. They just ignore their kids. They couldn't possibly bring themselves to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and stick it in a brown paper bag for their kid. That might let their kid know that they gave a crap about them. And, nah, they don't really care enough. It says, after the Denver school's chief made a high-profile announcement last August guaranteeing a full meal to students, whether or not they had the money to pay, many advocates cheered the so-called the end of so-called lunch shaming in the 92,000 student district. Then came the unpleasant surprise. Debt from unpaid lunches soared, rising to $356,000 from $13,000 the year before. It's amazing, and a sad commentary about us as a society that is, second, there's an opening for people to exploit. There are so many people willing to exploit it and just pile on through. Denver's exploding meal debt, accounting for roughly 900 unpaid lunches every school day of the year, illustrates the balancing act districts nationwide face amid growing public support for policies prohibiting lunch shaming. That's our problem. We're getting incredibly soft as a society. You can't let people know they're poor. Look, if you're poor, when I was poor, I knew I was poor. Growing up, I knew we weren't the Rockefellers. I was fully aware. I was allowed to play one sport because that was all we could afford. You know, if I didn't ever want to play basketball. Hated that game. But if I wanted to play multiple sports, it just wasn't in the cards. Parents didn't have time, and we didn't have the money for it. My dad was always working two jobs. My mother was disabled. Simple fact of life, I didn't miss out on a damn thing. I didn't play organized baseball. I played disorganized baseball all summer long, every summer. It was a blast. Hockey was my game. My dad drove the Zamboni at the ice rink in town on weekends, so he worked 7 days a week, and damn, you know, I got free ice time because I'd have to go in with him at 5 o'clock in the morning, but I could skate. It was Christmas days were fun because everybody who worked at the rink who had keys at the rink would show up at Christmas Day and New Year's Day because the rink was closed. It was awesome. But I had no delusions that we're, you know, just sitting on a pile of $300 million just waiting for our time to come. The house I grew up in was 20 feet by 20 feet. Eventually, when I was in high school, my dad built a garage because he always wanted a garage. It was a 2.5-car garage. It was actually 22 feet by 22 feet, the garage, when we finally got around to it, which was bigger than the house. That tells you. And there were 7 of us in that house with 1 bathroom, and somehow our bladders didn't explode. I watch this House Hunters International, and I see people going, you know, I need an ensuite in the master, and I need dual vanity. I need 2 sinks in the bathroom because there's just no way we could possibly ever function with just 1 sink in 1 of our 3 bathrooms. It's just, we'd be tripping over each other. And I think there were 7 of us, 5 kids and 2 parents in a house with 1 bathroom until I was probably 11, and then there was a half bathroom put in the basement, just a toilet and a closet with a sink. And I'm thinking, how did we survive? We did it. And now you got these snobs going, no, I couldn't possibly get by without a rainfall shower. How am I supposed to live? But yeah, we need some shaming. We need to bring back shaming. It is an incredibly powerful tool. And if you are on the government dole, you should feel shame. Damn it. And you see the cost, the explosion in cost, because there are always people ready to take advantage of any opportunity they can possibly get. It's a sad commentary on this country. It really is. And, you know, a good public shaming and a good shunning and some judging is what our society could really use. All of these mutants taken to the streets and absolutely demanding, you know, respect. And you can't judge my lifestyle. I can judge it. I can just leave you alone, but I can judge it. Speaking of which, really briefly, this is kind of annoying. Last story for today, I got to real quick about Mayor Pete. Remember I told you yesterday that Mayor Pete was attacking the Vice President of the United States for no good reason? Mike Pence never really said anything about Mayor Pete when he was governor of Indiana and Pete was mayor of South Bend, Indiana. They worked together just fine. They got along just fine. Mike Pence is not some raging homophobe that flies into a rage and decides he has to go out and attack somebody. Because they're gay. Mayor Pete is at it again. Mayor Pete is desperate to try and keep this going. And I told you why. And it makes perfect sense. Mayor Pete is trying to differentiate himself from the pack in the Democratic primary. They're all the same. They all stand for the same things. They all advocate for the same things. There isn't a dime's worth of difference between the two, or between the 20, I guess I should say. So they're all out there attacking Donald Trump nonstop, incessantly. Well, he thought, I can attack the vice president. He's in a unique position. He's a gay man. I think he's the only gay man so far, running for president on the Democratic side. And Mike Pence is a devout Christian man. So if I attack him, I can still attack Donald Trump and attack Mike Pence. That'll set me apart from the pact. I'm the only one willing to take on Mike Pence. Well, Mike Pence isn't paying any attention to him. Mike Pence is that big dog, and Buttigieg is that little dog in the cartoon that jumps around. Hey, boss, what's going on, boss? Pay attention to me, boss. Well, CNN described this as a feud. Now, for it to be a feud, both parties have to be involved, I would think. It wasn't the Hatfields versus the McCoys, and the McCoys were just minding their own business. No, they were killing each other. I could personally, maybe I'm in the middle of a feud with Bill Gates right now. Yes, that's right. I don't use any Windows products. Screw Bill Gates for what he's done. He doesn't approve of me and my politics, so I'll show him, and I'll just tweet randomly about Bill Gates constantly. Well, Bill Gates doesn't know who the hell I am. That's not a feud. That's me pissing and whining and moaning and throwing a hissy fit about Bill Gates, hoping that he'll pay attention to me, because once Bill Gates pays attention to me, then I can say, Bill Gates is attacking me. This billionaire is attacking me. That's what's going on with Mayor Pete and the Vice President of the United States. Yet to CNN, it is a feud. CNN's even their own story undercut their own narrative. The story reads, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg's recent rise in the 2020 presidential race has featured a steady stream of attacks against Vice President Mike Pence, the former Indiana governor who had a working relationship with the mayor during his time as the head of state. Pence himself has not responded to the pointed attacks, but on Tuesday, Second Lady Karen Pence and the vice president's spokesperson pushed back against Buttigieg's criticism. Quote, they've always had a great working relationship, Karen Pence said on Brian Kilmeade's radio show. It's funny because I don't think the vice president does have a problem with him, but I think it's helping Pete to get some notoriety by saying that about the vice president. That's exactly my point yesterday. You were a day ahead of the news because of this podcast. He wants to differentiate himself from the herd. He's not above lying and just spewing bile and hatred. It's kind of funny because Mayor Pete talks about his Christian faith, and it's very important to him. And then he goes on to judge the vice president's Christian faith, saying that it's wrong, which is a lot like, I don't know, it seems like what Pete Buttigieg is projecting onto the vice president, Pete Buttigieg is actually guilty of. See what I'm saying? Just a little bit of hypocrisy, but don't worry, it's all done in the name of progress. So it's all good. Hypocrites all around, ladies and gentlemen. Hypocrites all around. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Sorry I went a little long. My tax rant was just bugging me for a while. Email the show, Derek@dailycaller.com. Otherwise, be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something.